place for him to store all his secrets, which is probably why they're only full of useless things. Bits of paper, change, business cards for landscaping and the like. Closing them in disgust, I move to the dresser and snoop through each drawer, even pausing once to bring a white t-shirt up to my nose. Furious with myself, I throw it back in the drawer and slam it shut. My next area of attack is his closet, but I have to stop in awe when I see the shelves lined with meticulously organized clothes. My memories of him are so rooted in our time together at Blackthorn that the image of sophistication is jarring as a reality. The drawers and shelves in the closet yield no more than belts, cufflinks, and shoes. As I investigate his bathroom, I'm starting to think I won't find anything after all. I pull out drawer after drawer until one thing does catch my eye. As I pick it up, dumbfounded, I almost can't believe what I'm seeing. It's my security ID from Blackthorn. The one he'd read the first day we met. Probably kept it as a trophy when he pulled off his big escape, the sick bastard. I leave the ID where I find it. The reminder of what I've done may get him off, but it makes bile rise in the back of my throat. I was such a stupid, stupid girl. I put everything back in its place and double-check to make sure it's all just as I found it. Usually, I'd feel guilty for invading someone else's privacy, but as far as I'm concerned, if Grayson didn't want me snooping in his things, he shouldn't have locked me in his house.
Find what you were looking for,
Grayson says from his bedroom doorway. He doesn't seem upset, but based on the significant amount of control he's shown over the past few weeks, I couldn't tell even if he were. Not that I give a damn. I wasn't looking for anything specific, I say.
Weren't you?
He returns. Rolling my eyes, I make to move past him, but he blocks the doorway. My heart kicks into high gear. What are you doing?
I just want to talk,
he says. I don't. I think we did enough talking the other day. You made yourself perfectly clear. He boxes me in, one arm wrapping around my stomach to maneuver in front of me.
I don't think I did,
he says, and pushes me backward so he can close the door behind him. The sound of the lock echoes in my ears. Let me out.
No.
That's it? Just no? Grayson, I begin, and he stills. I remember what happened the last time I said his name. What he did to me because he liked it so much, but that won't happen again. You can't keep me here forever.
I can,
he says.
And I will.
Why? I ask, throwing my hands up. You got what you wanted. You're out of prison. You'll take care of Salvatore, and you don't need my help for that. You gain nothing from keeping me here. The arm around my waist tightens, and the next thing I know, he's over me on the bed, his body pinning me down. I freeze, overcome with a tumult of emotions and memories, neither of which are welcome. If you don't want a knee in your balls, you need to let me up right now, I say with forced calm. His arms braced on either side of my head, his mouth dipping low to my throat, I can feel his heartbeat against mine, and the soft rasp of his breathing against my throat. As he moves against me, getting comfortable, I realize this is the first human contact I've had since everything. And even though I hate him, even though he's the cause of it all, I wilt, my hands going around him. And I hate myself for it, maybe even more than I hate him. What is broken inside me that I look for love in the worst places? Was it programmed inside me from birth, or is it a product of my parents' neglect? Am I just so fucked up that I'll take affection wherever I can get it, even if it's from the worst possible source? He drops down to his side, and his arms go around me, urging me to roll with him until I'm plastered against his side. This doesn't mean I don't want to kill you, I say against his throat.
I know,
he says solemnly.
I'll let you kill me later. Just let me hold you.
I bristle at his words, but my anger lacks bite. My body needs the comfort more than I thought. My raw heart lifts as he strokes my hair and down my back, his hand coming to rest against my hip. Tears threaten, but I ignore them and press closer to the sanctuary of his body. "Make me forget," I whisper, my tongue flicking out to sample the familiar taste of the skin at his throat. "If you're going to keep me here and want to hold me, then you can help erase everything else." He doesn't speak, but he does as I ask, his mouth finding mine as his hand knocks my legs apart and finds my clit with unerring precision. I arch up to meet his touch, and within minutes, I'm clinging to his arms as I battle my ferocious response.
"Don't fight it,"
he says against my lips.
"Let me give it to you."
I grip his forearm to pull him away, unable to take the pleasure/pain any longer, but he simply takes my wrists, holds them against the bed, and slips his hand underneath my waistband to touch me skin against skin. The closeness is what I crave, and one stroke later, I come without warning, all my muscles contracting in concert. His muscles quake with restraint as he gathers me close.
"That's it, sweetheart,"
he says against my hair. As I lie in his arms a while later, I allow myself to think of the life I lost. What life could have been like if Grayson were normal and I weren't so weak. The two of us with a little boy or girl. Fantastic sex and dinners with conversations that don't revolve around murder or revenge.
"What are you thinking about?"
he asks, sounding drowsy. "Why good things happen to some people and not to others." I feel his lips on my cheek, and I sigh. This moment with him is just a reprieve. Tomorrow, things will go back to normal, and I'll be able to despise him again. 24. I wake back in my room, and I don't know how to feel about it. So, I ignore it completely. I have to get out of here before Grayson Stockholm syndromes me or something. Under the guise of my everyday routine, I put more effort into figuring out how to escape. Not causing Grayson serious physical harm when I was so close to him was the last straw. He's magnetic, and if I don't want to be sucked back into his vortex, I have to do everything I can to run in the opposite direction. I dress in a simple yoga outfit from my closet and brush my teeth as I plan. My best bet is going to be one of the less patrolled wings, which eliminates the kitchen and the garages, which are on the south side. I can break a window or pry open a door and then find a way around the wall. Marie greets me in the dining room with a breakfast tray and, thankfully, no lip. To fly under the radar, I follow my routine. Breakfast, swim, then I go to the library. By the time I get done with everything, it's already 1 p.m. The libraries are the only places in the house I haven't explored as thoroughly as I want to, because too much quiet time only leaves me despondent. I pick the biggest of the three, and if I'd been any other person, in any other situation, I would have declared the room to be beautiful. Both the left and right shelves are full of books of all shapes and sizes. In the middle, a large rug, club chairs, and a deep-set sofa invite guests to sit and relax with a nice read. Along the back walls are floor-to-ceiling windows that look out the side of the garden. I ignore the books and head straight for the windows. They're older than the rest of the ones in the house. Maybe they haven't been updated with a security system yet, though the possibility is unlikely. I study the hinges and note some of them are rusting. Maybe I'll be able to force one open.
"Trying to leave so fast?"
I spin around and find Grayson standing behind me. "What the hell are you doing here?" I stammer. He lifts a brow.
"I live here."
"I thought you weren't going to be back until dinner."
"I had a feeling after yesterday you were going to try to leave."
I raise my chin, my eyes flashing. "I should be able to go when I want."
"Not when Sal is still looking for you, looking for me."
"Does he not know where you live?" What's stopping him from rolling up right now and gutting us both like fish?
No one knows about this place.
No one?
My home isn't something I advertise, Tessa.
Feeling vulnerable and sensitive after letting him get so close to me, both emotionally and physically, I say, why did you even bring me here? Why not just let him get it over with and kill me? It would have been less of a hassle for you and would have saved him the trouble. He studies me before he says,
what makes you think I want you dead?
My laugh is joyless, hollow. I don't know. Maybe because I saw you kill a man? You forced me to help you escape from prison and then had sex with me while my husband's dead fucking body was in the other room. Not only that, I continue, working myself into a fine rage. But now I'm locked in your house and you won't let me go. I pause, chest heaving, and wonder if I should continue, but the words just don't stop. They spill out of me, inevitable and weighty. When I found out I was pregnant, I thought it was the best thing to ever happen to me. I figured it was the silver lining in the shitstorm that is my life. I didn't care that it was yours, that I'd be a single mom raising a kid on the run. For once, I had something perfect and pure, and then it was taken away from me. And I blame you. I wish you'd let me die. I don't know if I can forgive you for everything that's happened. He shrugs and looks away.
I don't expect you to.
What do you want from me?
I want to make sure Sal's dead and there won't be any blowback on you. Once I'm sure you'll be safe, I'll let you go.
The thought should have filled me with indescribable joy, but instead, I'm more conflicted than ever. Is that what you're doing every day? Looking for him? He crosses to the window and leans a forearm against it.
Yes, I am looking for him. He's gone to ground because he knows I'm looking for him, probably planning his next move.
He's silent after that, and it affords me the chance to just look at him while I consider his words. He's wearing jeans today with a button-up white shirt that's rolled up enough to reveal the shadows of ink unfurling on his right forearm. I follow the dark pattern under the almost see-through material of his shirt, and my mouth goes dry as a wave of intense desire courses through me when I spot the outlines of twin metal rings in his nipples. When had he had time to do that? I turn away, not wanting him to see just how badly I want to order him to take his shirt off so I can see them. My body still recognizes him on a primal level, despite what it's been through. It's primordial, instinctual, and I can no more resist how much I want him than I can resist breathing. When had he become as essential to me as life itself? Reconciling needing him with what he's done, I don't know if it's possible. His feet come into view, and I look up to find him standing in front of me.
Come with me,
he says, and I frown as he leaves the room. I hurry to keep up with him, not wanting to be left behind. Where are we going?
I'll explain when we get there,
he tells me, as he leads me to a door that has been locked every time I jiggled the handle. He holds it open for me, and I realize why I hadn't dared to force it open before. Rows of monitors line both walls with wide countertops in front of them. Two of his men sit in rollaway chairs and look up when we enter.
You want out of here? Then you'd better pay attention,
he says.
Pay close attention. Do you want something from me? I want something from you.
What the hell do you want from me? I hiss. You have me locked up here like a good little pet. What more do you want?
Kiss me, Tessa,
he says.
One kiss and you can go with me to track down those men who hurt you.
You're ridiculous. I don't fucking think so. Didn't you already get enough? He nods to someone behind me, and the bodyguards I'd forgotten were there come up behind me. One of the big beefy bastards grabs me by the arms, and I know I won't be going anywhere. I want to scream in frustration. Fine, fine. One. I mean it, Grayson. One kiss, and nothing else, or I swear to God I will kill you and they'll never find the body.
Don't tease me,
he says as he jerks his chin to the bodyguards, who leave. He crosses the room as they shut the door behind them, leaving us alone in the small space. Well, let's get this over with, I say.
So eager.
Less talking, more focusing. He chuckles and tucks his hands under the fall of my hair. His thumbs nudge my jaw, and I lift, glaring at him as he draws closer.
Is it really so bad?
The truth is, no, it's not. And that's what makes me so fucking angry. I don't get the chance to answer because his lips cover mine and scatter all rational thought, like dandelion fluff in a tornado. 25. My fingers clutch at the countertop behind me, because if they weren't occupied, they'd already be reaching for a part of him to touch. They'd be skimming along his shoulders and combing into his hair. He, however, has no such qualms about touching me. His hands drop to my shoulders before dancing over the neckline of my shirt and then down my arms, sliding along until goosebumps rise in their wake. On the upward movement, his hands round to my stomach, where they trace along my ribs and skim to just underneath my bra. As his hands are mapping my body, his mouth lays waste to the walls I'd carefully built since I walked away from him and my dead husband. When I can't take it anymore, I release my grip on the counter and push him away. Okay, I say, a bit more breathlessly than I would have liked. That's it. I held up my end of the deal. Now you hold up yours. He steps back, his lips flushed, pink and glossy, and I have to look away to keep from drawing them back to mine.
So you have.
He says a bit dazedly before taking a keyring down from a line of hooks hanging by a door.
This way.
Where exactly are we going?
According to intelligence I've gathered, Danny and his friends like to meet up at a bar a few towns over. If we're lucky, they'll be there and we can tail them to Sal's place.
Can I?
No.
You didn't even let me finish my sentence.
That's because chaos follows you around like a shadow. You'll keep quiet, stay behind me, and do exactly what I say, remember?
I grumble, but I don't argue. The possibility of finding Danny shuts me right up.
You know, if I didn't know any better, I'd think you were almost excited,
he says. I ignore the teasing tone in his voice and say, I assumed you killed them. I mean, before we left.
Unfortunately, no.
He spares me a short look.
I was more worried about getting you out.
Color me shocked. Grayson just admitted to being worried about me. I tuck that knowledge away and walk next to him in silence. The short hallway from the security room to the outside spills out into a 6-car garage, which is not the same garage I found last week. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't jaw-droppingly surprised. Even though I've been living in this house with his servants, cooks, assistants, and bodyguards, the reminder of his wealth is staggering. Each of the garage bays has a vehicle parked in it. The first has a truck, black, utilitarian, and very capable-looking. Next to it is an SUV of some kind, same color, and very sleek. Almost like it's one of the government-issue kind I'd imagine the Secret Service uses. I don't dare ask him how he got his hands on it. The next three spots are high-end sports cars in varying colors and makes. Jesus, I whisper under my breath. The keys jingle behind me, and I turn to find Grayson, watching me. He indicates the SUV.
We're taking this one.
I have to swallow to wet my dry throat. Okay. He chuckles.
I don't think I've ever seen you so speechless. Cat got your tongue?
Forcing my legs to move, I climb into the passenger seat as Grayson swings up beside me. I'm not speechless. I'm just curious. How is it that you can afford all of this? Or is that an off-limits topic? The car rumbles to life, and he maneuvers it out of the garage, I wait as he backs out and then shifts the SUV into drive.
There isn't a lot that's off limits to you, Tessa. You just have to ask.
Then tell me. How is it that you have a mansion and a shit ton of cars? You worked for someone to kill Salvatore, but in what capacity? Why? I've been wondering about him since I first met him, and now that he's in a talkative mood and we have time, I want to know more. As he gathers his thoughts, I drink in the view and roll down my window to lift my face to the fresh afternoon breeze. I'd been allowed to go to the gardens, but there's something about being cooped up that takes away its beauty.
I take contracts for several ghost organizations,
he says, and I jerk my attention back to him, swallowing thickly. Contracts? The word is barely a whisper. He nods, a quick jerk of his head. He'd put on sunglasses so I can't read his expression behind the tinted lenses.
Yeah, Tessa. As I said before.
His admission steals my breath straight from my lungs. But I gesture for him to continue, not wanting to make him clam up. He pulls out onto a highway, and I realize I don't even know what state we're in anymore. I'd been so out of it after the warehouse that I hadn't thought to ask. The terrain reminds me of California desert, but we're out in the middle of nowhere. We could be in Nevada or Arizona for all I know.
I got hooked up with a crowd of bad people when I was younger, and I got a bit of a reputation for being a problem solver.
Should you be telling me this?
I can tell you whatever the fuck I want. The people I work for pay me because I'm the best at what I do.
I lick my lips before I respond. That doesn't sound good. He shrugs as he merges into the far left lane of traffic.
It isn't so bad. I had a shit home life and nothing else better to do. I had the skills they needed and they trained me for a long time to make those skills even more deadly.
I try to imagine Grayson as a honed killing machine, and I'm staggered when the image isn't as much of a stretch as I think. After all, he managed to fit into prison as a thug so convincingly that he had everyone fooled. I had no idea this man was lurking just underneath the surface. Sure, I had an idea he was hiding something, but never in a million years would I have guessed this.
Too much?
He asks when he notes my expression. I clear my throat. No, it isn't that at all. It's just I'm realizing I don't know you as well as I thought I did. He tips my chin up with a finger.
You know me better than just about anyone, little mouse.
That statement says way more than he probably intended, and I hate that I feel bad for him. I hardly know him at all. And if I know him better than anyone else, it means he has almost no one in his life. He doesn't need, want, or deserve my pity, so I just say, I didn't know any of that. He shrugs.
It's just history.
Yeah, but I feel like you know everything about me. He shoots me a smile, which I don't return.
Fine. But only if you answer one of mine in return. Remember?
I scowl, which causes him to laugh. Fine. What do you want to know? I can promise you it won't be as exciting as a secret past. He levels me with a look.
Everything about you interests me, Tessa. But we'll start with something easy. Why did you decide to become a nurse?
I blow out a deep breath and smile a tiny smile. I guess I didn't want to become my parents. They were both minimum wage deadbeats with no options. Nursing always seemed like a steady job with a good income, something respectable.
Why the prison?
I laugh. Well, there aren't many employment opportunities in that part of Michigan, or didn't you notice? At first, it was only supposed to be temporary, until I could afford enough money for a move to the city or somewhere warmer. Then I met Vic, and, well, you know the rest.
What were your parents like?
With a groan, I say, is that really what you want to know? It isn't what you'd call a happy story.
The real ones hardly ever are. Yes, it's what I want to know.
Fine. But first, you have to answer one of my questions. He nods, and I say, you mentioned you got into a lot of trouble when you were younger. Why?
You already know why. My dad was a drunk, abusive son of a bitch, and my mom was more interested in her next score than raising a son.
My hand reaches out to touch him of its own volition, needing to touch him, to soothe. Having grown up in a house just the same, I don't have to imagine what it was like. I already know. I may not be sure about what the hell we're doing or why I can't stay away, but he hadn't been lying when he told me about his parents. If I doubted it then, I don't doubt it now. I'm sorry. He shrugs.
It is what it is.
I think I get another question because you slipped in several.
Fair enough.
What happened to your parents? Are they still alive? I almost hold my breath. Getting Grayson to talk, to open up like this, feels like a fragile opportunity, and I don't want to ruin it.
No, they aren't.
I shouldn't, but I ask anyway. What happened? He looks at me, tugs off his glasses, and rubs a hand over his face.
Are you sure you want to know these things?
There's a pause while I consider, but it's a short one. Yes. After what happened in Michigan, I honestly couldn't think worse of you. So it isn't like you're going to ruin your first impression. At first, I think I may have insulted him, but then he smiles.
I guess you're right. But remember, you asked.
His left hand lies on the top of the steering wheel, and he rests his right elbow on the center console between us. As he talks, I stare at his arms, at his tattoos, and clutch my own hands between my legs to keep from touching him or pulling him close to me.
My dad liked to get drunk, like I said, and he had a fondness for cards. He'd get wasted and piss away whatever money he had on him, sometimes more. When he'd win big and things would be great for a while. If he didn't spend his earnings on more booze and lousy bets, my mom stole it to finance her meth habit. When they were both dry, she'd sell her body to come up with the money for her next fix.
I don't realize I'm holding my breath until white spots dance in front of my eyes. Slowly, so Grayson won't notice, I let out the breath and draw in fresh air.
When I turned 10, my father nearly beat her to death, but she was okay enough to go out and overdose.
This admission shocks me into a stunned silence as I remember the way he looked at me when he first saw the bruises on my arms. Had he seen his mother in me? Is that why he chose me out of everyone to help him escape? I clear my throat. And your dad?
He went away for a while, and I went to live with my grandma, who wasn't much better than the both of them.
He looks at me, his eyes bright and full of mischief now.
Your turn. Tell me something no one knows.
This one I have to think about, and when I do, I start talking before I can think better of it. Vic got me pregnant last year. He didn't know because I was afraid to tell him about it. He didn't want kids, or at least that was the impression I got. So I was waiting for the right time to tell him. A tear slips down my cheek and I wipe it away. I didn't get the chance. I did something. I can't remember what it was, but it pissed him off enough that he beat me. I wasn't that far along, but the baby didn't survive. I kept it from him because he didn't deserve to know. As far as I was concerned, he didn't deserve to be that child's father. When I glance up, I find that the SUV isn't moving anymore. Grayson's pulled it over to the shoulder. We rock to a stop. What are you doing? I ask as he unbuckles and throws up the center console. He undoes my seatbelt and pulls me across the console so I'm in his lap.
What I should have done a long time ago,
he says, and wraps me in his arms.
It wasn't your fault. It was mine, and I promise I'll do everything I can to make it up to you.
He holds me for a long time, until the tears dry and my emotions steady. The only way you can make it up to me is to make sure they pay for what they did. His gaze searches my own, and he nods.
They will.
26. The bar we pull up to an hour later is like a thousand others. It looks more like a shack than an actual place of business. But the dozen or so cars parked in the parking lot and the music blasting from the open windows says it isn't going to close anytime soon. Alcohol is one of those things that will never go out of favor. There will always be someone steeped in misery and in need of something to drown their sorrows. Before I open the truck door, Grayson puts a hand on my arm and says,
"Wait for a second. We should talk before we go in."
I flash him a wobbly smile. "I think we've talked enough for now." He shakes his head.
"I mean about what we do when we get in there."
"Oh, that makes sense." So I nod and wait for Grayson to fill me in on the plan.
"If we're lucky, none of Danny's friends will recognize us."
And if we're not? I should be terrified by the prospect, but I can't deny the buzz of anticipation just beneath my skin. I don't know if I'm excited about the idea of revenge, thrilled to be outside and doing something about what happened to me, or if I'm just high on the intensity that's rolling off Grayson in waves. It doesn't matter. I'm itching to get in there. He doesn't answer my question, but he doesn't have to. The gun he stuffs in a holster underneath his shirt says enough. He hands me another, and I hide it at my waistband.
"Just listen to what I tell you to do, and we'll be fine."
I nod again, and he continues.
"They won't know who I am here, so I'm going to join the card game, and you're going to sit where I tell you and be quiet until I speak to you, okay?"
I make a zipper motion over my lips. "Whatever you say." He considers me for a second.
"Why can't you be like this all the time?"
"What fun would that be?" I say, and then open my door and hop out.
"I'm starting to think this was a bad idea,"
he says as we walk to the front door. The sign over the porch says simply, "Ray's," and the interior is as unassuming as the exterior. Since the only light in the place is coming from the backsplash behind the counter and a few ancient-looking fixtures above that must be on a dimmer, the inside is as dark as the inside of a cave. The smell isn't much better. Dirt, dust, man, and sweat assault my nose, making me have to work hard to keep from wrinkling it in revulsion. Peanut shells crunch underfoot as we cross the room to the bar where two lone men sit sipping their respective drinks. Music plays on low from an old-fashioned jukebox tucked in the corner. A woman in a skimpy tank top with skin in desperate need of moisturizer sidles up to us and plops down a rag.
"What can I get you?"
she asks around the cigarette clutch between her lips.
"Beer, whatever you have on tap for me,"
Grayson replies. "The same for me," I say, pleased to find my voice is steady despite my nerves. Grayson slides a couple crumpled dollar bills across the counter, and she slams two chilled glasses down in front of us. I take a sip to keep my hands busy and twist in my swiveling chair to study the rest of the bar. Grayson keeps his back to a corner as he does the same. There aren't many patrons this time of day, and those who are here seem to be solely focused on drinking as much alcohol as possible. I don't see anyone who looks like they would be involved with Danny, but what do I know? Grayson leans forward and grabs a hold of my chair. It screeches against the scuffed tile floor as he pulls it over to him. So close that I can feel the heat coming from him. I lift my brow in question, and he leans down and says,
"Play along,"
in my ear, causing me to shiver. Then his lips brush against my skin. His arm goes to the back of my chair, and he props one foot up on the rung underneath. I take a few deep swallows from my beer before leaning against him and glancing up. I'm so close to him that I can see his eyes have flecks of gold in them. His eyes find mine, and before I can react, he leans down to kiss me. This time, I don't fight him. I don't know if it's the beer, though I only had a few sips, the conversation, or his closeness. The only thing I do know is it isn't a game. Every touch and taste is 100% real. His hand comes to my hair as he deepens the kiss and angles my head up to take everything he has to give me. My hands come up to grip his shirt, and I whimper against his mouth.
They just walked in,
he says against my lips.
Don't look and laugh when I tell you to.
He doesn't give me a chance to respond, because his fingers tighten in my hair the same way they did that night in my hallway. I'm so lost in the lust of the memory that I almost miss him whisper,
now,
before he pulls away. Feeling a little drugged, I laugh over the rim of my beer and down the rest to cool the heat rising within me. I wave at the bartender and use the opportunity to look around. It would be hard not to spot them right away, as loud as they're being. There are three of them who saunter across the bar to the pool tables. They're dressed way too nice to be regular patrons, but the way the others' eyes slither over them like they aren't even there makes me think they've been here before, and they're trouble. Grayson toys with my hair idly as he covertly watches the three of them rack the balls and queue up a table. If I weren't as tuned into him as I am, I'd never suspect he isn't focused on me. I remember getting the same hyper-focused impression from him when I realized he wasn't after me just to get some ass. It's like the cogs in his brain are turning at triple speed. I take another gulp of beer because he may be focused on the men across the bar, but I'm not. Ever since I got another taste of him, my body's been clamoring for more, and all I can think about is getting another. He situated us so my chair is positioned in the V of his legs. One of his hands rests casually on the bar, and the other is on the back of my chair, twisting around the ends of my hair.
I love this,
he says as he runs his fingers through the length of it. Do you? I ask dryly. I hadn't noticed.
The first time I saw you with it wrapped up, I wanted to take it out and see it all around you. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Why? My voice sounds hoarse to my ears. He makes a noise in the back of his throat.
I'm not sure. Maybe because you seemed so uptight. I wanted to loosen you up a bit.
You have a funny way of doing that.
Worked, didn't it?
I consider my current state of affairs. My limbs are loose due to my second mug of beer, and my hair is spread out over my shoulders. Even after all that's happened, I'm out of Michigan and free, so to speak, of the relationship that was slowly killing me. I didn't mean to kill him, I say, and I realize it's true.
I don't think the world is any worse off having lost him,
Grayson says, his hand coming to rest on my neck underneath my hair. Is that why you say you aren't sorry for what happened?
Partially,
he replies. I wish he would look at me.
But mostly because I can't be sorry that you're alive. I never planned on being a father. I'm not sure I'd make a good one,
he says ruefully.
But I do know I don't know what would happen to me if you hadn't made it that day.
My throat closes, and I take another sip of beer to clear the emotion weighing there. Maybe the drunks at the counter are onto something. I feel better than I have in a long, long time. Or maybe it's the comforting feeling of Grayson's hands now whispering along my back.
It's time,
he says, and gets to his feet. He holds out a hand for me, and I take it without hesitation. The three men are finishing their game of pool when Grayson pulls up beside them. I don't have to act drunk, because after two beers on a semi-empty stomach and having a low alcohol tolerance to boot, I'm buzzed.
Sup?
One of the men says. His brows are pinched and wary as he crosses his arms over his chest, his discomfort with Grayson's commanding appearance apparent. Grayson jerks his chin.
What's the buy-in for tonight's game?
He starts digging in his pockets. The one who must be the little ringleader says,
Private game, sorry.
The first one's eyes bulge out of his head when Grayson extracts a rather large wad of money from his pocket.
You sure?
He asks with a cheeky grin at me.
My lady and I are looking to have some fun tonight. She's never been to a poker game before.
The two guys look to their leader, who favors Danny enough in the color of his skin and bone structure that it makes me think they are distantly related. This one has about 30 pounds on Danny and around her face, but the eyes are the same. I'd never forget those eyes. Grayson wraps an arm around my shoulder and presses his lips to my hair to whisper.
Stay calm, little mouse. Don't worry, I'll take care of it.
I could end it here. Reach for Grayson's gun and put bullets in the three of them. Killing Danny's relative would send a hell of a message, and I like to think I'm getting pretty good at being just as ruthless as the man beside me. But sending a message like that may cause Danny and Sal to go further to ground. So I relax and send him a sunny smile. Breaking from his grasp, I brace my hands on the pool table to accentuate my cleavage and bat my eyes at them. So, what's it gonna be, guys? Are we gonna have some fun tonight or what? 27. The tension in the room is palpable, and the three guys, who I learned are named Desmond, Cody, and Jasper, are sweating so much their skin reflects in the yellow light from the overhead fixture. About an hour ago, the bartender, I still haven't gotten her name, led the five of us back to a dark room with a small card table and a couple of chairs. The felt table is worn to the pressed wood underneath, and not one of the chairs sits squarely on the ground. But the three men don't seem to care. After Grayson flashed his money, they only had eyes for the pocket where he stashed it. The first two hands, Grayson sat back in his seat and quietly listened to the three of them talk shit. He let them beat him until they felt comfortable. Then this attention grew much more focused. It's their 10th hand, and Grayson hasn't been kind to their wallets. I can tell Desmond, the one who looks like Danny, wants to call him out on something, but he wisely bites his tongue. Which is surprising, considering how much they have drunk. While they've been downing Jack and Cokes, Grayson's sipped his warm beer and studied them. A panther waiting to attack, all sleek muscles and dark eyes.
Call.
Grayson says, and places his bet.
So are you gentlemen from around here?
I nearly snort into my third beer, which I've been drinking much slower than the first two, but I managed to contain it. He's lulled them into such a false sense of security and plied information from them so subtly, I wouldn't believe it if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes. So far, we've learned they visit California and Mexico frequently, and that they all have family in the area. I wanted so hard to perk up when they revealed that little piece of information, but I forced a bored expression on my face and pretended like I'd rather be anywhere else in the world. It wasn't hard because I'd rather be with Danny, watching the life drain from his eyes.
Yeah, they're from around,
Desmond says with a side-eyed look at me. He's the only one of the bunch who wasn't completely charmed by my faux airheadedness or wooed by the stacks of cash Grayson kept piling on the winnings in the center of the table.
Why are you so interested?
He asks Grayson.
Just making conversation.
When the others aren't looking, he sends me a look under his lashes, and I tense, my body coming alive. Whatever he's planning is going to happen soon. Desmond doesn't look mollified. If anything, his suspicion grows.
Then I'd suggest you focus more on your cards and less on chit-chat.
He places his cards face up on the table. The others do the same with Grayson at the end. Desmond's aces best Grayson's kings, and Grayson sighs.
Sorry, baby,
he says to me.
I didn't mean to ruin our night.
Desmond sends his friends a wordless order, and they surge up from the table, their hands slipping knives from where they've been stowed in pockets.
You think we didn't know who you were the second we laid eyes on you?
Desmond says.
You must be dumber than you look. That's a possibility,
Grayson says calmly, without bothering to get up. He takes a sip of his beer and casually places the glass back down.
What is it you think you're going to do with those pig stickers? You're coming with us,
Desmond says.
Uncle Sal's been looking for you. I don't think I can accommodate you,
Grayson says, and begins tucking his things back into his pockets.
You can give him a message for me, though.
Desmond scoffs.
I'm not giving him shit. Keep your hands where I can see them. Your lady, too.
He jerks his chin at me, and the two men circle the table and bracket me on either side.
You're going to want to leave her alone,
Grayson says with forced calm.
Put a hand on her, and I'm going to have to put my hands on you. Only I won't be as nice. All I wanted was a few answers. I've got one,
Desmond says.
Fuck you!
Grayson sighs like he's dealing with a room full of children instead of a couple of grown men armed with knives. He pulls the gun from its holster and points it at the man on my right, who pales considerably.
Step away from her,
he growls.
Don't you fucking dare,
Desmond snarls as he pulls out a phone.
Shoot one of us, but you won't be able to get us all. And the second you try anything, one of these boys is gonna have a knife to your girl. Don't fucking push me. You think so?
Grayson asks, and I shouldn't be surprised he's so calm.
You're damn right I do,
Desmond says. I pull out the gun Grayson had given me and train it on the man on my right, and then the knife I kept in my pocket goes to the throat of the man on my left. You really think so? I say, and smirk. While Desmond is staring at me dumbfounded, Grayson lunges with his characteristic feline grace and smashes the gun against Desmond's head. The two on either side of me are too stunned to move for a second, so Grayson advances on Jasper, this time hitting the man with his fist. Grayson gets the same result, and the man crumples to the floor next to his buddy. The third moves faster than Grayson expects and has me in his arms, his knife slicing right through my shirt and into the meat of my upper arm. I cry out, and Grayson shouts, stunning the third guy enough that I can drop to the floor and out of his reach without getting hurt. By the time I scramble away and climb back to my feet, Grayson has him in a chokehold. The man bucks, trying to get free, but it's almost laughable. A moment later, he joins his friends in La La Land.
Fuck,
Grayson says as he takes in the shallow slice in my arm. I start to protest when he takes off his outer shirt to press it against my wound, but I'm cut short.
Fuck, baby, I'm sorry.
It's fine. I'm okay.
I shouldn't have let you come,
he says. Grayson, I say sharply. When he looks at me, I admonish. I'm fine. Let's finish what we came here to do, okay?
Keep pressure on the wound, and I'll take care of these guys and bring the car around back. Don't move anywhere.
He turns and takes two steps before thinking better of it and coming back to my side.
I fucking mean it. Don't move from this spot, or I swear to God.
As soon as he leaves, I slump against the chair behind me, feeling woozy and punch drunk. The men at my feet twitch, but they don't rouse. I keep the gun in my hand just in case, but no one wakes. Grayson comes through the back door and helps me down the short hallway to the exit before tucking me in the front of his SUV and disappearing back inside. Yes, I can walk perfectly fine on my own, but again, I keep my mouth shut. I'm not sure what he does with two of the guys, but when he comes back out, he is dragging Desmond behind him. Once the Danny lookalike is tied up and tucked into the back of the SUV, Grayson tears out of the parking lot, and I grip the oh shit handle to keep from falling into his lap. We're fine, I say. We got what we wanted. He isn't listening to me, of course. Instead, he has his cell phone pressed to his ear.
Get Dr. Haversham. I don't care if he's on a call for the goddamn Pope. I want him at the house in an hour, or he'll be hearing from me personally.
He slams the phone into the cup holder, and I try to keep from smiling. You realize I'm a nurse, I say to him. I can probably take care of this by myself. It's really not that deep at all, just a couple stitches.
We're going to have the doctor look at it, end of discussion,
he says, his tone implacable. Fine, but I want to know whenever you get any information out of frat boy here. I jerk my finger over my shoulder to Desmond, who's still out cold. Grayson grunts. Seriously, Grayson, I'm fine.
I'll believe that when Haversham gives you the all clear.
Both of his hands are clutching the steering wheel for dear life, and sympathy cuts through my frustration at his insistence that I see a doctor. I press a hand to his arm, like I wanted to do when we were driving earlier. Grayson, I say tentatively.
Don't. Just don't.
I sigh and sit back in the seat. It's going to be a long drive back. As soon as we pull into his garage, two men stride to the SUV to deal with Desmond, and Grayson hustles me up to my room, where Haversham is already waiting. I told him it wasn't a big deal, I say to Dr. Haversham. The doctor glances from Grayson to me, and I know he won't be on my side on the matter.
Let's get you cleaned up. Shouldn't be more than a few stitches.
I shoot Grayson a look that says, I told you so, and he scowls. The doctor cleans the cut on my bicep, which is only a couple of inches long and not very deep. He numbs it with a local and begins stitching with efficient movements. I ache to ask Grayson what he's done with Desmond, but I assume what I have to say is better left until the dog is gone. 15 minutes later, Grayson shakes the doctor's hand.
Thank you so much for coming at such short notice.
Dr. Haversham gives Grayson a small smile.
Anytime, Mr. Kingsley. I hope not to see you for a while, though.
With that, the doctor closes the door behind him, leaving me alone with Grayson.
You should get some rest.
Rest? I'm disappointed that he doesn't want to stay. What about Desmond? The soft expression on his face hardens.
I'll handle him.
And what am I supposed to do now?
Rest.
He repeats and guides me back to the bed.
I'll come get you if I learn anything from Desmond.
I do as he says, only because the wound in my arm is throbbing so much it makes it hard to concentrate on anything other than lying still. The next morning when I wake, it's to the sound of Vic's voice. 28. Immediately, I shrink back into the pillows, not realizing where I am or what's going on. All I know is the man who abused me is near, and I have to do everything I can to get away. I stumble out of bed and fall into a crouch, paying no mind to the pain in my arm. I only have enough focus for the fear coursing through me. A cold sweat dots my brow, and it takes agonizing seconds for me to realize Vic isn't in the room with me. I wipe a hand across my face and strain to hear the sound again. The room and hallway beyond the yawning door are dark, except for the thinnest glow of light coming from the far end. I listen to the sound again, and my heart stops beating right there in my chest.
Mrs. Victor Emerson. How about that, ladies and gentlemen? Isn't she beautiful? Tell me she isn't the most beautiful woman in the world. I'm a lucky man, I tell you.
The background is garbled, but I'd recognize the voice anywhere. Confused, still thrumming with panic and disoriented from sleep, I stumble into the hallway and follow the sound of my dead husband's voice. I wonder if maybe I'm having some sort of dream induced by the adrenaline from earlier, because I can't feel a thing, and the world around me wavers. The light is coming from under the door across the hall from the monitor room. The door opens easily, revealing a set of stairs that descend to what I can only assume is the basement. I move down them as silent as I can and freeze at the bottom when the voice comes again.
Come here, sweetie, let's show you off.
I'm breathing too fast and sweat is streaming down my face. Blood drips from the wound on my arm, but I don't care. I turn the corner and stagger to a stop. The basement is essentially bare, save for a small table with a box placed on top. The box whirs and snaps, and then light shoots out and spills onto a figure strapped to a chair. But it isn't the bound man facing away from the wall who captures my attention. It's the video splashing across the crisp white drywall behind him. Vic, who is dressed in a sleek tuxedo, holds up his hand, and the crowd around him cheers. Dazedly, my eyes travel to the person next to him. Me. This is my and Vic's wedding video. I can't tear my eyes away from the replica of his face. As I watch us move into the crowd at the small reception, I find myself shaking, my teeth chattering. I'd been so different then. You can see it in my carefree smile and my adoring glances at Vic as he parades me around the restaurant. I don't know how long I watch, entranced and unable to tear myself away. I watch until the video comes to an end, and the screen goes black, which shocks me out of my stupor. As the projector starts the video over from the beginning, I shake my head to clear it. Vic's voice fills my ears again, and I try to block it out by focusing on my surroundings. I take a few hesitant steps toward the shadowed figure. He's strapped to a chair in front of the projector and has a black silk bag fastened over his head. When I'm close enough to reach him, I extend a hand and snag the material with the tips of my fingers, partially fearing I'll find Vic's face underneath. I can't help but feel like this is some sort of fucked-up gift as I pull it off to reveal the man beneath. As his face comes into view, the black hood drops to the floor, and I take several rapid steps backward, my mouth gaping open in horror. It's not Vic underneath, but it is another man who stars in my frequent nightmares. Andrew, Danny's right-hand man from the warehouse. Only he looks nothing like the man from my memory. If he'd stuck his face in a blender, it would be an improvement. The skin on one half droops in bloody, matted ribbons, and the other half is so swollen, his lips have cracked from the strain. If I hadn't spent the past few weeks replaying what he did to me in the warehouse, I wouldn't have recognized him. I backpedal to get as far away as I can, and I slam into a hard wall behind me. I turn, hands up and ready to defend myself as I dry heave. When I see it's Grayson behind me, and not an actual wall, despite what we've been through together, the fear I've been suffering through since I woke up to Vic's voice dissolves, and I relax. "What's going on?" I ask him, but he doesn't answer. He just raises the tumbler of scotch he's holding and takes a sip. "How did he get here?" "Grayson?" I fight the tremors attempting to consume me. Again, the glass lifts to his lips, but this time he drains it and then moves to pour himself more. I brush the hair out of my face and try to piece together what's happening. Apparently, Desmond talked. I don't want to think about how Grayson got him to spill Andrew's location, but he must have nabbed Andrew and brought him here while I was sleeping.
"What the fuck?"
Andrew says, and I spin in time to see him open his eyes. He squints against the bright lights, and then his face dawns with clarity.
"Fucking shit,"
he whispers, before struggling against his restraints. His voice is warbled from the severe beating and his swollen lips making it hard for him to speak.
"Let me go."
I turn, expecting Grayson to answer him, but he merely keeps his eyes on me, takes a long drink from the tumbler of scotch, and shifts just enough to reveal the table next to him. The man in the chair must notice it too, because he starts struggling more violently. I'm back in the warehouse. My arms burn with phantom pain, and vicious needle pricks ignite in my arm. My legs burn and my stomach cramps. There are knives, a torch like the one they used on me, rubber mallets, whips, a baseball bat, and even a gun. It's all laid out in a neat line, waiting for someone to pick their poison. "What is all this?" I ask Grayson, trying to keep my response calm. Again, with the silence as he takes a seat in the chair off in the corner of the room. I pick up the knife, intending to cut the guy free, if only so he'll shut the fuck up until I can figure out what the hell Grayson's game is.
"Please, let me go, please. We never intended to hurt you. We were just supposed to rough you up a little until you talked. Just cut me loose and I won't say anything to Sal, I promise. Not a fucking word, just let me go."
I start in Andrew's direction. And then the wedding video stops and restarts again, and Vic's face flashes over the wall. I doubt it's a coincidence that Vic's image aligns exactly with the man who beat me bloody. The knife falls to the floor, and my body goes cold. Memories from the night they beat me and ghosts from my life with Vic flood my thoughts so violently that I have to squeeze my eyes shut to keep from crying out in shock from the maelstrom of emotions.
"Shit, lady, are you fucking crazy? Please, just let me loose. Just kick the knife over here before he does something crazy. Please.
Over Andrew's shouts, I hear Vic inside my head.
I don't want you associating with that inmate again, do you hear me? McNair and Summers couldn't stop smirking at me when they found me. You humiliated me.
Tears track down my cheeks, and I clap my hands over my ears for a buffer against the noise, but it doesn't drown out the whisper of Vic's voice inside my head. If anything, it makes it loud enough that I want to claw at my ears. I give a passing thought to Grayson, but I don't doubt he did this for a reason, however fucked up that reason may be. I've stopped trying to understand him. All I need to do is get the guy on the chair out of here, and then I can leave. Isn't that what Grayson promised after all? Once everything is over with, I can leave. With that in mind, I reach for the knife and straighten, blocking out the sound of Vic from the projector as best I can. A quick look shows Grayson still lounging in his chaise, watching, waiting. What the hell for? I don't even know, but I ignore him too. Knife in hand, I cross to the man in the chair and kneel to undo his feet. I'm doing fine. I get both feet undone, and then I get a closer look at his face. That's when everything goes to hell. I freeze right beside him with the knife in my hand. I remember his face staring down at me while he, Danny, and the others brutalized me. I must take too long to work through the rush of hate and fury because a second later he shouts,
"Untie me, you fucking slut, or I'm gonna beat you so fucking bloody I'll have to wash what's left down the drain like I did your fucking baby."
I lose my fucking mind. With an inhuman scream, I shove at the plain wooden chair and it topples over. The guy emits a hoarse shout and bucks against the concrete as he tries to right himself before I get to him. I stalk back to the table, setting the knife down on the floor out of Andrew's reach, and take the baseball bat. He releases a choking noise that cuts off in the middle as I use the bat like a golf club and hit him as hard as I can in the stomach. I crouch down as he wheezes to regain his breath.
"How do you like that, you fucking slut? Does it feel good? Maybe I should keep you here for a couple of days, make you piss yourself so you can see what it's like, hmm? Maybe I'll beat you unconscious and watch what's left of you go down the drain for a change."
Mindless, head full of screams and horror, blood and death, I drop the bat on the floor next to the knife and stand. My eyes fall on the rubber mallet. When I return to the man's side, I swing my hand back and begin pummeling his upper body